Ingram Smith, Bud Elliott, back again to do another episode of the Nolecast. Bud, exciting time here as we kind of sit and watch a series of events play out that we've never really seen before in recruiting, as far as the inaugural early signing period and how that's going to impact Florida State and how that's going to impact the college football landscape in general. So kind of as we enter the final big weekend in front of that signing day period, we'll just do our best to bring everybody up to speed with where Florida State stands, kind of what Florida State's realistic goals should be, and maybe a couple kids that Florida State may be trying to pursue to not take place in this early signing period, and see if a delayed decision can't be achieved if you're looking at it from Florida State's perspective. So very excited about what we have on tap. Want to always thank the people at Louisiana Hot Sauce for making podcasts like these possible. Currently got a pot of greens on the stove and a healthy amount of Louisiana hot sauce in it, and look forward to what I'm going to have a little bit later on. So I love that we can partner with a great product and a partner with a product that both of us authentically enjoy and are proud to have associated with the podcast.
Absolutely, man. Let's get to these hot recruiting takes. For y'all who don't know, the early signing period is coming. It's on Wednesday, December 20th through the 22nd. That is a really inconvenient time to have to cover recruiting, to be honest. I'm sure my wife was absolutely thrilled when the NCAA approved that time, and many coaches are probably not loving that either. But yeah, so kids can now officially sign on Wednesday, as opposed to waiting until February to do it. Now, there's a lot of pros and cons about why you would want to or not want to do that, both for the school and for the kid. More cons for the kid, more pros for the school. I'm not going to cover that really on this show. On the SB Nation Recruiting Podcast, I talk more about the intricacies of the signing day, how it all works, as well as just on SBNation.com. You can click on the recruiting tab, and there's a bunch of stuff on early signing day. But for Florida State here, they're one of 20 schools that change coaches in the offseason. And that makes for a very interesting thing here. To be honest, the schools that change coaches are not in great shape leading into early signing day. It's just the timing of it stinks. And it's really going to impact things in future years as well for schools that change coaches. I mean, if you change coaches, you are almost certainly behind the eight ball with, you know, not a whole lot of time to put together your class. And that really matters because a lot of these schools think they're going to be signing like 80% of their prospects early. Now, I don't think that the schools that change coaches are going to sign 80% of their class early, but they really do want to sign everybody who's committed to them. And I think that, you know, Florida State is a decent shot to get a lot of those kids to sign. But, you know, one of the main things is trying to convince some committed kids to maybe hold off, right? And just, hey, look, you may not need to flip to us right now, but, you know, give us a chance down the stretch. Let us have these final 6 weeks to you know, recruit you. Leading up to the traditional signing day date, and maybe we can pull something off with you. And with that, you know, I think that's Florida State's primary goal right now. Secure the current commits they have, don't lose any more, and then get kids to hold off. Now, they're going to get some commits probably this weekend, by the way, but or at least they will. The work they put in this weekend will lead to some kids signing with them on Wednesday who are not currently committed. But they're trying to get as many kids to visit this weekend as possible. And look, we don't want to timestamp this because this stuff changes a lot. You know, I'm talking to kids this week and they're like, yeah, I'm coming. And then the next day, no, I'm not coming. I'm going here, or I'm actually not going anywhere, or no, I'm not coming. And then all of a sudden, yes, I am coming. We say it's a fluid situation in recruiting, but it really is. A lot of these kids don't drive, so their parents have to take them, and they're being pulled in a million different directions before the biggest decision of their life, which makes it tough. So we'll just see what happens. But I can tell you who, you know, who I think is going to come visit and who Florida State is trying to get to come visit. You know, that's kind of the best mishmash we can put together here.
We talked beforehand. This is just a really tough subject to do a podcast on in general, because kids' rides can cancel. Like you said, maybe a kid can be persuaded not to take a visit at the last second. Just things can come up, and doing like a visitor preview episode was not something that we thought was a good idea. But there are still some kids that are making their way onto campus this weekend and very well could be a part of Florida State's class. So we'll just go kind of position by position real quickly, take a look at what's out there and some maybes that might be visiting or Florida State might get themselves back involved with. But first of all, we'll look at quarterback. Michael Penix is a name that we've mentioned a couple times on here, kid that appears to be making his way to Tallahassee this weekend.
Yeah, so FSU offered Penix. I don't know if that's a committable offer at this point. In fact, I have my actual doubts about that. Tampa Bay Tech kid, we discussed him on a previous episode. You know, I think he's a good depth option. Doesn't really blow me away as a player, to be honest. We try not to lie to y'all, right? If we like a kid, we do. And if we think he's good, we tell you. So I think he's just good as opposed to like a superstar. But you got to take a quarterback in this class. You really, for numbers-wise, you got to do it. So he's going to be up. It is interesting, though. I don't know if you saw this article, but it looks to me like Tennessee dropped Penix from reading the quotes and some of the things that have come out since then. That might be because he doesn't fit the offense they're trying to run, or maybe they just disagree with the former staff about his talent level. But for everybody thinking that Penix decommitted from Tennessee because he got the FSU offer, I'm not so sure that's accurate. It looks like Tennessee may have told him that he no longer has a spot in there, and it just coincidentally FSU had offered him.
But anybody else at the quarterback position, as far as a visit, is going to be involved with before signing period? I know there's a kid out of Georgia, and I'm not referencing Justin Fields, that we've kind of heard some rumblings about, but how much do you think they may be involved with the Emory Jones kid?
I think they're definitely trying to get Jones to visit. Now, so is Florida, by the way. I think both schools would like him to visit this weekend. He is currently committed to Ohio State, but I think a lot of Ohio State people are very aware of the shakiness of his commitment to the Buckeyes, and Florida State would like to get him in. He's a top 10 level quarterback nationally, I think, a higher level of player than Penix is. So, you know, there's some stuff with his motion that's going to have to be worked on a little bit, but I've seen him a pretty good bit, and I like Emory Jones. Big kid, good runner as well. So we'll have to see if they're able to get him in. But I know they're trying, and so is Florida. And I think he'll show up somewhere this weekend. I'm not 100% sure it's going to be Florida State.
But while we're on the subject of maybes, a name that people are going to be familiar with, James Cook. You think Florida State's involved here at all?
I think Florida State would like to have Cook hold off on signing early with Georgia. Now, that's Dalvin Cook's little brother. They did sign Tilly Lockett, obviously, to be their tight ends coach, which is, by the way, pretty good news, I think, on that front, because he was initially going to come in to be the running backs coach. And if they're moving him to tight ends, then that, to me, says they probably have somebody really, really good lined up to coach running backs. Maybe Coach Pimp, Dante Pimpleton, at Oregon, pretty good recruiter in his own right. But with Telly Lockett, former Northwestern high school offensive coordinator, former head coach of Miami Central, worked with Taggart at USF and at Oregon State. A good recruiter, knows a lot of guys in South Florida. Coached Dalvin Cook and Devontae Freeman. So pretty good running back names in Florida State history. And it would not surprise me if they are able to get James Cook to wait until the traditional signing. I'm not saying they're actually going to sign him or that they're going to get him on a visit this weekend, because I'm not sure if they can pull that off. But it wouldn't shock me if they do good enough work to have him maybe wait.
Two names at the wide receiver position, Warren Thompson and Antoine Green. Thompson's a kid out of Armwood, and a lot of people have circled that this may be a year that Florida State doesn't just break the Armwood curse, but perhaps signs multiple kids. Give us an idea as to where you think Florida State stands with these kids and whether or not they make their way to campus.
Yeah, I think Florida State will end up getting both Armwood kids. Malcolm Lamar, the defensive end, on a visit as well. And I think they'll get both receivers back in the fold with Warren Thompson and Antoine Green. I think they're going to get all three. Now, Thompson, we've talked about before, he was a kid that Oregon actually beat out Florida State for on a commit out of the Tampa area. Surprise, surprise. You know, big physical receiver. I think they're going to get him. They need to sign receivers in this class that, you know, probably one more than they would have signed under Fisher, because they are going to run more spread sets under Willie Taggart. And Antoine Green has some really nice speed. For a guy, you know, with his size. And, you know, he was a former FSU commit who decommitted, and then I think they'll be able to get him back in the fold.
Offensive lineman out of Georgia, Christian Armstrong, kid that's been committed, been kind of always one of the guys that you thought Florida State would be able to ultimately take from A to Z, a guy that out of Central Georgia that ultimately very much appears to be part of the class.
Yep. I think he's a, decent player and is going to stay in the class. I think that's his best option, and he seems to be all in with Florida State, and they seem to be about him. So that's good news, and he's coming in as well. It's important this weekend to have these kids who are committed get in and help recruit other kids, right? They want to show them why they love Florida State and why it's such a great place. And if you have you know, your current players still on campus. You have coaches and whatnot. But you also have current recruits who say, hey, yeah, I'm going to be here with you too. This is where I'm going, and here's why. That's always a good thing.
Yeah. To that end, we'll move our attention to the defensive side of the ball, start with a kid that we mentioned at the beginning of the most recent Nolcast prior to this one, Robert Cooper, Georgia player, remains committed, is going to be on campus, has shut down his commitment or his recruiting process, and he'll be joined as far as the defensive side of the line of scrimmage, a guy you just mentioned a second ago, Malcolm Lamar, and then maybe potentially Jared Jackson. That's a kid that we're just going to have to wait and see. Maybe been some conflicting information as to whether or not he'd be able to make it to campus.
Okay, so Robert Cooper, yeah, locked in. I think that's really good getting him on campus. Malcolm Lamar, who we mentioned a little bit ago when I was talking about receivers as well, big body defensive end. That's what Florida State really needs this year. They don't need the edge rushers quite as much, but they do need some bigger bodies at defensive end. So getting him in would be great. I think they'll be able to sign him. And Jared Jackson, who I don't think is coming now. And I did earlier in the week, and then now I don't. And he's a Louisville commit. And it'd be interesting to see if they can get him to wait, you know, maybe and try to reschedule that as opposed to signing on Wednesday. This is kind of a theme, man. It's secure yours and delay theirs. And then maybe be able to flip theirs down the line. You know, Jackson's another nice player out of Palm Beach, but I don't think he's coming for a visit at this point. But that's still a pretty good defensive line group coming in with Lamar and Cooper.
Amari Gaynor, kid that's long been discussed on the Nolcast, committed local product out of Tallahassee. He'll be on campus. Asante Samuel Jr., another kid currently committed, be on campus. And Isaiah Bolden appears to be another kid that we're fairly confident is going to make his way up to Tallahassee this weekend.
I think Bolden will be in the class too, to be honest. And you know, almost equally as important is getting Samuel. I know he's committed, getting him to be fully locked in. And you know, Miami's very much on him. They're trying to flip him, but I don't know. We'll see if they're able to get him to lock down. Bolden, obviously the kid who was a Florida State commit, then flipped to Oregon out of the Tampa area. I think he'll be in the class. You know, here's a name for you that they're really trying to get to come up this weekend, and so are the Gators, by the way. Brennan Radley Hiles, very interesting. Former Nebraska commit. He's a California kid, but he's at IMG. FSU really didn't recruit him very much under Jimbo Fisher, and now they seem to like him a lot under the Willie Taggart era. And they're trying to get him to come up on a visit. We'll see if he does. Also, don't be surprised. I'm not saying Florida State's going to sign this guy, but don't be surprised if they're able to get Nadab Joseph, a name we've mentioned on the podcast before, was an LSU commit, now is a current Bama commit. Don't be surprised if they actually end up getting him to delay signing it and maybe take it to February or at least wait a little while for a visit. That's a guy they've had a lot of contact with, both with the old staff and the new, and a player who I think would fit what they want to do.
All right, Bud, we'll use this brief little window of time to remind our friends that choose to listen to us what our partners at Madison Social and For the Table Restaurant Group are doing. We mentioned this last episode. The 17th of the month is always Reuben Day. That's day after tomorrow. Keep that in mind. If you are maybe in Tallahassee going to watch the 19th-ranked Florida State basketball team play tomorrow at 2, if you need a little place to pregame or maybe a spot to enjoy what might be yet another Florida State victory, Matso and all of the Centrale Township, the whole kind of college town wing of their operation is a fantastic place and something that we would suggest people coming in or keeping in mind. And Bud, I know they're doing something a little special on New Year's Eve as well.
They are, man. They're going to have Tallahassee's only midnight fireworks show on New Year's Eve. So that's going to be pretty sweet. Be sure to check that out. You can find more about that on their website, Madison Social, or on their Instagram page. Again, Madison Social. And Ingram, two more things that, you know, Reuben Day is Sunday. Reuben Day
is something that we have long since enjoyed discussing. It's a fantastic sandwich. They do an incredible job. It's just the consistency met with a exceptionally high-end or exceptionally quality product. You're not going to see them put out any kind of advert that you look at your Reuben beef and go, what the hell is that? And that's a direct reference to Subway's ads right now. But yeah, Reuben Day, Madison Social. They've been doing it since they opened the doors, and it's one of the better sandwiches you're going to be able to find.
They make it. They make all the ingredients in-house, which is pretty sweet. By the way, if you want to get some of those sweet t-shirts they're slinging right now, or maybe some koozies, mattisocial.com/gear. mattisocial.com/gear. Find some of their awesome t-shirts. And it's important to get those quickly because they do go quickly. And some of those, I believe, are limited run. So you gotta jump on those when they come out.
But anybody else you feel appropriate to mention here, kind of kids that may make their way on campus or somebody that Florida State's particularly trying to work to see if they can't get to extend this recruiting process an extra 6 weeks or so?
At the moment, that's basically what I got. I can almost guarantee you as soon as we hit end,
right?
I'll get a little more, and then I'll get a text. Oh, hey, this kid's not coming now, or hey man, I'm not gonna be able to get a ride, so I'm not going, or I'm visiting this place or whatever. But it's gonna be interesting. I know we'll probably do another show before this actual signing day, and we'll certainly have an early signing period show recapping all the news and whatnot. But as of now, that's kind of what I think they're going to have for this weekend. And on short notice, I think that's a pretty good weekend.
A lot of talent, good blend of kids that are still, or at least that you're trying to make open to the process, kids that are maybe committed but not fully committed, and guys that have kind of led the way throughout the class. So a good blend. Be really interesting to see what they are able to put together and kind of set the stage for what remains on the recruiting scene with the final 6 or 7 weeks, and see who is out there and who's even able to be pursued or what's left on the board. So interesting year here. Obviously, this is new territory for everybody, but interesting to see how this weekend plays out and how much it really shapes Florida State's first signing period. So we kind of selected three or four email questions, not necessarily like a mailbag show, obviously, as we've done 20 minutes of recruiting conversation, but just a couple things that we saw that we felt kind of tied into current conversation, and just always appreciate the feedback. And we don't have to look too far to find good content and questions that you guys send us. So appreciate that as always.
Thank you for keeping us FSU fans informed with the best podcast in the country or the industry. Your coverage of the coaching change was excellent. Go Noles. Thank you, guys. Ingram, how would you organize the coaching staff if you were Willie Taggart? And what's the ideal position allocation of a 25-man recruiting class?
I'll tackle the second one and then move to the first one. And I don't mean to give you a throwaway answer, but really that's a different – maybe he's asking about this particular class, but really that changes every year just depending on particular places you're trying to recruit, guys that you think are going to fit in the program in maybe a 2 to 3 year window of time, guys that you have to have fill a need, maybe first season or at least sophomore season on campus. There's not really like a great plan that you want to sign 3 linebackers, 2 defensive tackles. It's just kind of reflective of what you've had on your roster, what you've had leave your roster, and sometimes maybe even more importantly, who's kind of receptive to your message. How would you organize the coaching staff? Well, I mean, I think it'll be interesting to see once we have a staff in front of us what it looks like, if it's a recruiting heavy staff, if it's a blend of guys that are known as recruiters in the industry. It appears from what we've heard and the one hire that's been made that recruiting, of course, at Florida State, it's always going to be a priority. But this looks like it'll be a staff that'll be able to go out and do work on the recruiting trail. And that's not a complete shocker to me. This is a by no means an empty cupboard that Taggart's inheriting, but there's some real places on this roster that need to be turned over and need to be addressed sooner than later. So hard to answer exactly what the ideal staff looks like, but will be real interesting to see once the staff is composed and we can kind of get an idea as to whose responsibility is what and what people are really being asked to do.
The other ways we can take this question, I guess, I think he will definitely continue to do the regional recruiting because that's how you have to do it, basically. You want to establish relationships. You want one guy to establish relationships in a certain area. And I'll give you an example. Larry Scott of Tennessee is a really good recruiter in Southwest Florida, right? And in the Tampa area as well. Schools know him. Kids know him. High school coaches know him. You can't just have we've covered this on previous shows. We have so many new listeners, and we love all y'all. So I guess I'll say it again. you can't just have like your position coach recruit just his position and fly him all over the country to do so, because it's not feasible time wise and travel wise, but it's also not feasible like relationship building wise. If you're, you know, if like, I'm sorry, coach, I only recruit receivers. You know, I'll have to send our offensive line guy by, you know, next week. It's not feasible. If you're thinking about like how, you know, with the 10th coach coming, right? And we kind of tackled this question last time, you know, how would you break it down as far as like the coaching responsibilities? Well, again, there's not going to be just a designated special teams coach, because he wouldn't be doing anything in a lot of these like practice periods, and it wouldn't be an efficient use of the coaching spot. I think one of the interesting questions will be, how does he break down the defense? I assume you're going to have probably a corners coach, a safeties coach, one linebackers coach, one defensive line coach, and then either probably like an outside backer slash ends coach, right? Which is similar to how Florida State had it already, with the exception that they had one guy coaching the secondary. And now I think you'll have two, probably a separate corners and safeties coach. Some staffs break it up currently to where they only have one D-line coach and two DB coaches. Florida State had two D-line coaches and one DB coach, which is, you know, fine too. It's a little different. But now I think you'll be able to have both because you have the 10th coach. On offense, it's going to remain the same. You're going to have a running back coach, tight end coach, line coach, receivers coach, quarterback coach. Some teams do break it down differently. Like I know if you're like a major spread team, they have like instead of like a tight ends coach, they have inside receivers and outside receivers coaches. And I know some teams kind of break it down where they have the tight ends coach also coach the offensive tackles, and then the underlying coach just coaches the interior guys, the guards and centers. But I don't expect Taggart to do it that way.
Any comment about the allocation of a class? What you see, how coaches do that?
You know, to be honest, it's just you nailed it. It was, hey, like what do we need this year? But also looking in the future. If you think about like the allocation of your roster, right? You're not going to sign 25 kids every year, because then after 4 years, you'd have 100 and your scholarship limit's only 85. And even if you process some kids and some kids leave early, that's still tough to sign over 100 in a four-year period. But you would like to have four quarterbacks on the roster, I think, generally. Probably want to have five running backs. As far as skill position guys, increase that a little bit, probably 20 total skill position guys. Now, I think Taggart will carry probably one more receiver than Florida State has been carrying and maybe one fewer tight end, but we'll see on that. They'll definitely carry fewer fullbacks because they don't seem to use those very much. So maybe they won't carry less tight ends at all. Maybe they'll take those fullback scholarships and allot those elsewhere, like to more receivers and whatnot, or maybe another back. Offensive line, I think their numbers are going to be exactly the same. They're going to want to carry 16, 17 offensive linemen, maybe 18 in a given year. On the defensive line, you know, you'd like to be four deep. You'd like to have 15, 16 guys there on the defensive line. Linebacker, I think eight's a good number, typically, seven or eight linebackers in terms of true backers, not like hybrid, you know, defensive end slash backer types. And then in the secondary, you're probably going to have 16 guys in the secondary, and I'm just kind of keeping a running count in my head. That should be fairly close to 85, and you can fudge those numbers a little bit. And then you're probably going to have a scholarship kicker, scholarship punter, and a lot of teams will have a scholarship long snapper, like Florida State does right now. So you take that and you look at your goals of 2 and 3 years, and that's basically how you get to your 25-man class.
Another question we had here comes from Brad. Brad writes, "Hey guys, first off, started listening to you guys last year, immediately got hooked by your energetic podcast and love for Florida State. Definitely want to shout out Louisiana Hot Sauce, which is the only thing that got me through the meals served aboard the submarine, the USS Maine, which I was on for 6 years. Brad, appreciate your service. Thank you very much, sir." Brad writes, "Congratulations on breaking 5,000 five-star reviews. I'm a proud contributor to that and had a question I've been pondering. In y'all's expert opinion, where do you think Florida State would be right now as far as a bowl game and record had Jimbo left at the end of last year and taken the LSU job and Taggart had been able to make an immediate transition from USF to Florida State? I understand there are a lot of unknown variables involved with the question, but just wanted to ask as far as how you thought the current roster would play out and how, basically what you're asking, where do you think we'd stand had Jimbo made his jump last year and Taggart had been in place since last spring?"
Okay, so for the purposes of this question, we have to assume Francois still gets hurt, I think, right? Because otherwise, it's a different variable.
Yeah, there's a lot of, I mean, this is going to be filled with hypothetical in general, but I think it's worth operating off the same series of injuries and stuff like that. Sure.
Okay. So Jimbo went 5-6. Obviously, Odell is undefeated at 1-0. Essentially, under Jimbo, they were 6-6, basically. I would say that Taggart would have been, with the Francois injury, I'm going to say probably 8-4, 9-3. I think he's probably 2 to 3 wins better, because I do think Fisher had one foot out the door, and that the culture there was got really bad.
Yeah, and that was one of the last things that he wrote. He wrote, I feel like the lack of effort from the coaches cost us at least 3 games and could have been sitting around 9-3 at least. We've talked and we've been pretty frank about some of the, and we were, I believe, the first ones to really address this head on, that recruiting had stopped. We mentioned a couple situations that we were familiar with the Justin Fields recruitment that both of us just couldn't make any sense of as far as how that played out. I don't wish to go back and relive the whole Jimbo thing, but I'll tell you that I spoke to somebody very familiar with Owen Popo's recruitment, told me he hadn't been contacted by Florida State up until 10 days ago, until in the end of August. I mean, that's a kid that is potential. I don't know if he's the best player in next year's class, but he's one of probably the top 10 or 15 players in 2018 who was very, very interested in your program. You and I may have a little bit of a disagreement as far as how much of a legitimate player Florida State would have been there, but there's a lot of things that really make you question as far as how much Florida State was fully focused as far as what they were doing from their head coach down. And also, even before, as much as you want to, or as much as we or the fan base may want to identify the exact spot if Jimbo Fisher turned out or when it was, I don't think Jimbo Fisher had made this decision exiting spring. And I can tell you that the vast majority of their summer was crap. I mean, they didn't really focus, or at least reports that I got from people that I spoke with, it was late for them to really turn on and fully focus and have maybe the type of summer that you thought they would. And that's the type of summer that you would almost have to have when you know what's waiting for you come 1st of September there with the biggest program in the country as your kickoff game. So there was a lot of dead wood here in general, and it would have been a really interesting situation had you been able to go ahead and get to replacing some of that a calendar earlier. As far as how the record would be different, I think I'm probably similar with you. We'd be looking probably somewhere around 9-3, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to argue for 10-2, I get that. You're probably still going to lose the Alabama game, and probably would still lose to Clemson. I think maybe you don't lose NC State. Maybe you don't lose to Miami. Maybe you don't lose to God. There's so many losses.
do you get embarrassed on national TV in a game that you don't show up for?
Yeah, see, I think that's a really good one. No, I don't think you do. And, you know, like, I think 9-3 is probably most likely, because I think you would still lose Bama, Clemson, and, you know, probably one more, especially since you lost Francois. But, yeah, I think Brad's idea of 9-3 seems about right.
Next question comes from Daniel. Daniel writes, subject of the email I thought was humorous, Louisiana hot sauce is awesome, and show should our next strength and conditioning coach. Body of the email reads, I was wondering who are some of the better strength and conditioning coaches available and who might Florida State fans look as far as who their future coach would be?
Look, here's the deal. We didn't really do like the strength coach hot board thing because that's just not how it works. I could name off some good strength coaches, I guess, but look, coaches almost always take their guy because that's the guy they trust to get stuff done. And it's also like their confidant, right? Like that's who the coach is calling up and saying, okay, you know, I'm not allowed at the summer workouts. How did this go today? Or, hey, maybe this would be something that y'all should work out today, right? Like maybe this formation or what, you know, not stuff that's kind of quasi-legal. Every coach has their strength coach, and they oftentimes are like paired together for their entire careers because of that relationship. So I think he's going to take the guy that he had at Oregon and USF, who has a very difficult name to pronounce. But that's my guess.
Next question comes from Tim. Tim writes, howdy. Been listening to the Nolcast for the past 2 seasons. Tim, I'm not sure if that's a A&M reference or not, but well played if it was. Been listening to the Nolcast for the past 2 seasons and love what y'all do. Especially love the honest conversations about recruiting with the lack of winks and nudges. So from an honest standpoint, can y'all tell me what the strategy is with silent commitments? I'm sure each recruit's situation is unique, but I was hoping y'all could shed some light on why this occurs.
Silent commitments are commitments that are given to a staff but are not out there in the public. And so in order for the commitment to stay silent, the kid has to stay silent. The kid's parents have to stay silent, and so does the coaching staff. Now, there's a lot of stuff that goes into it, so let me kind of take why you would want to do this. From a coaching staff perspective, one of the main reasons why you would want to have a kid stay silent is because you're also still chasing other kids and you don't want to scare them off. So that could be a factor, you know, because there's some kids who are like, well, I'm not going to come if this other guy's coming, at least, you know, not initially. Now, if they may, once they get the kid committed, they might also tell them, hey, this other kid wants to come. You know, that wouldn't bother you, right? Like, you're not scared of competition. And then so that you, that's kind of how you end up pulling it off, getting two kids committed there. Now, secondarily, the other thing is that once a kid goes public with his commitment, then all the schools know who they need to go after negative recruiting wise, right? Like, and so that's, you know, that's a thing there. If the kid's uncommitted, it's hard to know who you need to negatively recruit against, especially if he has a lot of, you know, a lot of suitors. Number three, if you're trying to get paid out some, if you stay silently committed as opposed to publicly committed, you can help convince other schools that you're actually serious about them. And then you can get the money that oftentimes comes to convince kids to take visits. And that's, yes, that's how that works, either directly or like indirectly through a 7-on-7 coach or a high school coach or something. And I don't begrudge them. I think we have a pretty pro player stance on the Nolcast. So yeah, you're trying to play that game, then being silent could help you. But also, you know, you could say, well, why not just, or why commit at all then, silent or otherwise? And I think the reason there is you maybe know where you want to go and you want to make sure your spot's reserved, at least internally, even if it's not on a big public guest list at that point. So that could be a way to do it. You also might want to just, you know, tell them, hey, I'm coming, you know, just, you can count on me, save my spot, but I want to announce at some big, you know, hat ceremony, mm-hmm. or I want to announce my favorite restaurant or wherever. And there's different reasons for that kind of stuff. Another reason why, by the way, is so that like if it's a kid who is going to leave town and
exactly.
you know, yep. doesn't want to
state kid,
yeah.
a lot of local pressure. That's exactly what I was about to say.
You know, I had a kid tell me, he's like, hey, I'll tell you where I'm going, but don't put it out there. And I said, okay, deal. Cause he's not like a big enough kid where I would really need if it was a huge kid, I wouldn't agree to that because I would just go get the scoop from somewhere else. Right.
Right.
But I agreed to it, and I've known the guy for a while. And he's like, all right, I'm going to this school. And I was like, you already told him? He's like, yeah. And I was like, you're staying committed to the other school right now just so that you don't catch all the hate on Twitter. And he's like, yeah, man, I'm just not trying to have my Instagram, you know, filled up with idiot fans from the school. I'm not going to name the school on here, obviously, because they might keep it away who I'm talking about. So yeah, that's another reason why they would do it. That's a good question, though. I bet you a lot of people didn't have a full grasp on why silent commitments exist. Thanks for that, Tim.
Yeah, it's a good question. It's not, you know, like you used to see a situation like if you're trying to recruit a kid out of South Georgia and maybe mama worked for a big booster at a factory plant or something like that, you'd have a kid keep that under wraps. But recruiting's changed a good bit. That's maybe some of the information everybody's so aware as to a lot of the more surrounding issues and where kids go, and it's hard to do like a under the radar visit. Some of those still happen, but everything's just a little bit more challenging, and you've seen kind of a shape as far as why maybe some kids used to be silent commitments previously and why they are now. I think that's all the questions that we have for now. Don't want to make this particularly long. Tried to make this not a whole lot of time sensitivity, but still just judging the conversations based off a recruiting visit for this weekend. Need to keep this as short as possible and have Judson be able to turn it around in as expedited a manner as possible.
Oh, one quick thing on Jim Leavitt. I think we can, especially if you listen this long enough. This isn't confirmed, right? This is just a theory that was floated to me. And the theory was that Oregon boosters were really, really angry that Willie Taggart, you know, took that meeting with Florida State while he had flown down to Arizona on a you know, booster plane to do some recruiting. And I get why they'd be angry with that. Also, I think it's, the timing of it's also kind of unavoidable, unfortunately, for them. The theory out there is that they are still really unhappy with him and are going to try to spite him by offering Jim Levitt some absolutely insane number, like, you know, 1.85 or something like that.
Yeah.
I think there's like two coordinators in college football who make 1.85. Brent Venables makes pretty close to that, I think. But, you know, he's also a pretty good recruiter. Levitt is more of like the just the coordinator type thing. I'm not saying he's a bad recruiter, but he's not somebody you would really consider an ace on the recruiting trail. I will tell you this though, I don't know if I actually buy it, that theory, because if they were really offering him that much money, aren't you taking that like immediately and be like, all right, sweet, like I got, you know, 1.8. Like why wouldn't they announce that immediately? You got signing day coming up. You'd want to assure your kids who their coach is going to be as quickly as possible.
I think. Yeah, every day that goes by, I think, you know, the percentage that he returns to Oregon drops, and it's not necessarily guaranteed that he's at Florida State, but it'll be interesting to see. I mean, I think there may be a little bit of validity to what you talked about as far as even not so much despite Taggart as much as it is that they think they were headed in the right direction. They have a chance to have one of the better recruiting classes they've ever had. If they were able to wrap Levitt up, they have all the incentive in the world to try to do it. You know, they may not have a top five or a top eight class, but they're still in a place to put together a really, really good recruiting class. And for Oregon, probably the best class that they've ever dreamed of putting together. So, again, every day that goes by that he's not extended, I think, is a small increase in the likelihood that he ends up in Tallahassee.
It could also be a negotiating tactic.
Yeah, very true. Yeah,
I mean, I absolutely could. But as far as, like, are you hearing any other legitimate names for defense coordinator? I'm not. I think we both got emailed Jim Mora Jr., but I don't know if I actually buy that.
I don't think there's a snowball's chance in hell that's going to happen.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to drop down to a college defense coordinator.
Or that he would do a good job of it. No, thank you. No, thank you.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know enough about him as a coordinator. I know he's a pretty good recruiter. But I got to think if he was going to take another job so soon after getting bought out from UCLA, he would probably take an NFL job, wouldn't he? I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong on that. But, yeah, that's kind of where we stand with the defensive coordinator search. But it's very interesting. We will probably know more after Oregon's bowl game, which is, what, the 16th or 17th? I think it's
17th.
This weekend. Yeah. So, yeah, we – again, I just think if you're keeping Jim Levitt and he's already agreed to come back to Oregon and you gave him some mega offer, wouldn't it be announced by now? 5 stars on iTunes, y'all. Really appreciate all y'all listening. We are going to have more podcasts coming out. We'll be sure to have one probably early this week, and then also one like after the signing period, so that y'all can have something to listen to on your Christmas commute. Yeah, for now, subscribe to us as always. Tell your friends about the show. We really appreciate all our new listeners. And you know, for our loyal listeners who've been with us since day one, I hope that this is not too repetitive. Obviously, when the audience expands as fast as it had, you know, it's hard to say, hey, in a previous show we discussed this to a certain extent, because there's a lot of people who haven't maybe heard a previous show.